Hey, what's up, Project Nerd fans? This is Carrie coming to you from the 8th annual Front Range Film Festival here in lovely Longmont, Colorado. And I get to not only watch, but talk to Sean Ender, who brought Colorado moose to this film festival. And if you didn't know, like I didn't know, there are moose, only as well as singular and plural, moose here in Colorado. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm good.
So tell us a little bit about your documentary. You chose this... this really interesting topic that I think, again, I didn't know, the moose and how they're in Colorado. So talk to us a little bit about how you kind of came to get involved in this and then kind of the idea around the documentary.
Yeah, so Colorado's moose is kind of an all-encompassing story about moose in Colorado. How it started was I had gotten a new camera, wanted to go up, get some time behind it, and went to a place that I knew that I could see moose. And so I spent like 3 days filming with them all day long. And it was such an incredible experience that it kind of let me, it kind of inspired me to research the story a little bit more and figure out why, like how they got here and kind of their story in Colorado. I was actually surprised to find that a lot of people didn't know that there was moose in Colorado.
Right.
Or if they knew that they were there, didn't know that there was this big effort to reintroduce them to the state. And so as the project kind of unfolded, kind of we told the story of how they came to be in here and how they grew and came to thrive in the state, and also their impacts then on tourism and wildlife management.
Wow, I think the whole thing that encompasses that entire film that you made. But let's break that down. I think the first thing I was looking at is the repopulation. So you kind of touched on that a little bit. But it seemed, and correct me if I'm wrong, but at one point the moose were gone from Colorado. Is that true?
Yeah, so like in the 1800s, they were transient. So they were kind of coming in from Wyoming and Utah. But they never, there's no evidence that they ever bred here. They were here. There's photos of them. There's a photo of a parade where there's a moose statue. And so there's definitely evidence that they were here, but they never bred. And Eric's one of the biologists,
said, right,
you know, if we never populated Colorado, there's a chance that maybe they would have taken hold here. But in the 1800s, you know, people started homesteading and coming to Colorado, and, you know, there was no game laws back then. So it was just kind of hunting for markets and sustenance.
Right.
And because of that, they were never able to take hold in those early days.
Yeah. So what were some of the things that when they repopulated, what are some of the way the community kind of embraced the repopulation, because this couldn't have taken place without the community? And if I recall correctly, it started in North Park, Colorado?
That's correct. Walden area, Rand, so is where they were first introduced.
How did that take place? Like, what was the, one, like, why moose? You know, they weren't here, it seemed like. You know, at one point they were gone. Why this idea of bringing them back into Colorado?
Yeah, there was this kind of feeling from local managers in that area that North Park is, and it still is, just such a wild place. There's such diversity of wildlife in that area. And then there was this interest of, can we bring moose into this area? And so these wildlife managers, especially the district wildlife managers, the game wardens, tend to have really deep relationships with the people in their community and the ranching public that also use the lands. And so they kind of started doing research of, you know, it looks like we have really good moose habitats. We start studying that, like how much habitat do we have? How many can we sustain? Are we going to have conflicts on like unmanageable conflicts with land users? And the feeling, the more they got into it, the feeling started becoming more and more that this isn't going to be an issue. And if there are issues, we can handle those. And like the fear was they were going to be like elk, who can have, and especially in winter times, will come down and feed on ranchers' hay supplies.
Well, that's what you say, like ranchers, in your documentary, I think it's really interesting, at the very beginning, you touch on this concept of in Walden, in this North Park area, it really is ranching.
Yeah.
It is the economy.
Yep.
And a lot of it is cows or, you know, calves, and the need to have grass, the need to have this sustainable, you know, plot of land, and how not only what we currently have in place with wildlife, but now introducing more wildlife into that environment might affect them. What was the effect? What did they find when they started this repopulation, this small amount of moose in this area. What was the outcome? What ended up happening when they repopulated?
Well, so the initial reintroduction was 12 in 1978 and 12 in 1979. And so it was a small enough population. As they started to grow, they kind of learned that there's not actually that much conflict in terms of moose coming and eating hay.
Okay.
And the conflicts that they do have are minimal and manageable. And it's an interesting thing because as much as ranchers don't want moose and other ungulates eating their hay, wildlife managers also don't want moose eating hay because they can't digest it. So it's really bad for them. If they eat solely hay, they're going to die.
Well, that's what was crazy to me. And if I recall right, the grass hay was a big focal point outside of like when you talk about ranchers, we're like, well, yeah, we have cows, but we also have this grass hay, which I had never thought of as an actual agricultural element that they actually sell. And that's what you're talking about, right? The idea of eating that grass hay could affect their digestive system, or?
Yeah, so the moose can't, if they solely eat that grass hay, they don't have the rumens in their stomach to digest it. And so they'll be full, they'll feel full, but actually they're starving.
Okay.
The ranchers, you think of them as, you know, cattle producers, but they're grass farmers, really. I mean,
was what was crazy, and I think, and I hope you all understood it, because that was one of the things I took away from the documentary that I didn't know. Growing up in the South, you know, you see all these, you know, these cows, these cattle ranches, but you don't think of them as like without the grass. If I'm not worried about the grass, I don't have my cattle. So I was really interested to see some of the ranchers kind of talk about that piece as the sustainable thing they needed for not only their economy, but also wildlife and how wildlife would be impacted. But I think going into that a little bit further, how did it evolve, right? You talked about 78 and 79. How did it take hold? You said 12 and 12, I think, if I got the numbers right. How did it evolve from that point? Did it stall to see how it would affect it, or were they continuously every year repopulating?
Yeah, so like they're good at repopulating. They don't herd up, so they tend to be fairly spread out, and the population grew.
Okay.
Grew to a point that it was kind of a sustainable thing, and as it grew, there's other areas of Colorado that became interested in it. So Creed was one of the first ones that became interested. So they actually took moose from North Park and brought them to Creed to reintroduce a population down there.
That was a strange, like, at least for me, a strange maybe isn't the right word, watching how they transport this animal, this huge, amazing, heavy creature from one area to another, I thought was really interesting. One of the questions I had was regarding the blindfold.
Yeah.
Right? Why do they blindfold that animal?
It calms the animal down.
Okay.
So for like when you're doing later on in the movie, when we get into some of the research that's done, they'll actually tranquilize them so they can go work on them.
And then
they'll
get some of their blood samples and all that.
Yeah, yep. But a lot of times when you're working with these animals, you kind of don't need to tranquilize them and put them through that. Like, the less you can do
so when they're
the animal,
blindfolded, they're not put out.
They basically hobble them so they can't get away, and they blindfold them, and it really calms it. So it's like that one sense that they can't, like, use fight or flight, right? So that really, like, settles them down, calms them down. And then, Steve was telling me, these dudes from New Zealand and Australia come in with the helicopters, and they're nuts. And
is that when they're throwing the nets down?
Yeah, so they shoot these nets.
Some of those stills that you have where they're doing that is just insane.
Yeah, they shoot these nets from these helicopters that kind of tackle the animal.
Right.
And then they go over there, hobble them, they pick them up with a hook, and then they drop them at a drop site. And they're incredible pilots where they can let this 1,200 pound animal down extremely smoothly, and then a bunch of people come and pick it up and put it in the trailer and drive it on down to Creed.
It was so crazy to me to see, and I think what I loved about your documentary, and I apologize for being biased, what was the cinematography element of it. You know, anybody can kind of like shoot like a Nat Geo, kind of like, here's a moose and watch the moose in its habitat. But some of the stills that you incorporated, some of the old photos of when moose were previously here in Colorado, I really appreciated to get the whole story of it, right? But it lended right into what I called like the second act of your film, or the documentary, which is this photographer. Is this crazy woman that's just out there just shooting these amazing photos. How did you get involved with her and her story and how she's capturing these films?
Part of the story that I wanted to tell outside of like the historical reintroduction was their impact on watchable wildlife. Like people love coming to Colorado for a lot of reasons.
Right.
Some people would come here solely to see animals. Some people love coming here because they can camp and fish and you know, ride mountain bikes with a chance of seeing wildlife. So what has Moose done to that, and especially in a place like North Park, mm-hmm. where it's largely ranching, but it's a lot of tourism. People go to North Park to see moose. And I thought a way to like kind of sort of encompass that into one story was to follow this wildlife photographer around, because she kind of embodies, you know, going out into the woods with the goal of photographing these
right.
animals. And she's an incredible photographer. She's knowledgeable. She's respectful. She's kind of a student of you know, this natural world that she spends so much time.
Well, she showed the appreciation, and mm-hmm. I think you did that as well through your documentary, appreciating the animal for what it is. But she follows this cow and calf.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume you were there watching it as well.
I filmed kind of on my own. Like there was a lot of times where I'd spend time with interviews and kind of sit down and say like, all right, what's going to be in the film?
I think that was the hard part as an audience member
is
how much
scenes.
Was yours versus how much was hers.
Yeah.
But this amazing scene of this cow and this calf, and I believe if I recall correctly, it was 4 days old. This little like calf.
Yeah. So she told a story of her favorite photo is of this 4 day old calf nuzzling mom, and she knew it was 4 days old because a friend of hers saw it born
right.
and it fell into the river. And I had actually happened to have had, it's obviously not that calf, but I have footage of a calf trying to swim across the river
yeah.
and it gets swept away. And like mom was kind of concerned. Like she
okay.
kind of looks
so
around.
So we're on the same
like,
page. Eh. When I watch it, I'm like, okay, what's the mom gonna do? It's just gonna let it keep
You'll
going.
Be all right.
And I'm waiting, I'm like, oh, this might end badly. You know,
yeah.
like I don't know where this is gonna go. But so we're on the same page. Like it's crossing like a little stream.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously a current, and the mom is just going, and the calf is just but the sound is what's insane. That calf kind of doing whatever it is to kind of alert.
The calf is kind of going like and the
yeah.
mom's just going,
It's kinda like come on,
she's
come on.
Like reassuring it, but I mean, that was incredible because I was actually filming with that pair for a few hours and kind of just tucked back, following them around, and mom decided to go across the river, and watching that unfold,
yeah.
like that's kind of a dream to watch something so unique where she's going, and you obviously, you're not going to go over there. You can't interfere. You know,
right.
But to see that calf get swept out of view and then to keep the camera held there, have this little head pop up with these ears tucked back soaking wet. I mean, it was pretty incredible. And
yeah.
when she got to shore, like she the little calf shook off and she was fine. She was jumping
right.
around and mom decided.
But for you, like not knowing, like I loved
yeah.
it because as an audience, you typically don't see that. You hear that story.
Mm-hmm.
Like you come back and like, hey, I got to watch this cool thing. And you're like, all right, cool. You can't visualize it. But you had a camera, and as an audience, we're just captivated by these two animals in their natural habitat, and I was really blessed to be able to watch it. I hope our audience gets to see that as well. So switching it, the main part that I saw at the end was this educational piece.
Mm-hmm.
You really did a great job, I think, of trying to educate not only myself as someone who lives in Colorado, that there are obviously moose here, but how these moose can thrive. So talk to us a little bit about the education that we all need to ensure that these animals still get their place here in Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, all like wildlife needs to be managed because there's a lot that goes into it, and there's mitigating conflicts, and you have to keep populations at a level that can sustain it, or else you know, the habitat, the ecosystems will crash, and then the animal populations will crash too. And that telling this film, I actually learned a ton about wildlife management and everything that goes into it, and everything I learned, I kind of tried to put into the story, obviously surrounded by moose and you know, some of the things that they do of you know, building friendly fences so that the
right.
moose don't get into the hay yards, and you know, creating better habitat for moose and other ungulates. So we covered a project they did on Owl Mountain in North
mm-hmm.
Park, where it's really just trees and nothing on the ground for wildlife to use, so they can use game cache to create better habitat for these animals, and you can't do all the research and all the land work without hunting. hunting and fishing licenses and the federal excise tax on that sort of equipment.
Right.
All the research that they're doing, you know, trying to figure out how many moose are on the landscape and how many the landscape can sustain. And that's really hard work because elk in the winter, you can go out in a helicopter and count them.
Right.
And get pretty good population estimates. Moose, there's, I don't know, like 2,500 around the state. So if you want to count the North Park population, that's around, they estimate around 500 or 600. But it's a huge area.
Right.
They stay at 10,000 feet. They're tucked into the woods. You can't fly a helicopter and go count these animals. It's incredibly hard to do that. So the research project that we covered was trying to figure out an efficient way to come up with models to estimate populations. Yeah.
I think that's what most people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're unbiased people. We hear things through the news or whatever, but there actually are people that are really invested in studying this to make sure these animals not only are fed properly, but obviously they're mm-hmm. dealing with the economic concerns of the ranchers and focusing on all the aspects these animals bring. And I really appreciated that. I thought it was very educational, but in the right mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't just this idea. And I think that sometimes we get glorified by the gory, you know, like people shooting or mm-hmm. hunting. And I like that, at least in your documentary, it focused on the beauty of the creature, the mm-hmm. beauty of the animal in its natural habitat and unaffected by anything else. So I think that at least as somebody who watched it, I really enjoyed the story. I thought that it was really inspiring in a way to know that in my own state that I have it. Because I went to Alaska, and we were talking off camera, I went to Alaska to see a moose, didn't find one, didn't realize they were here. And North Park, if I got it right, it's the moose viewing capital of Colorado.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, it's on their sign. That's one of my favorite things in the movie. It's just this little still that just says moose viewing capital of Colorado. And how they embrace it, like the moose cafe,
super proud of it.
Right? The economic boost, and I think that that's an underlining tone that you create in this narrative, is the economic aspect for each community. That when they're reintroduced in certain environments, the not only the elegance of the animal in that environment, but people are coming to view them in the correct way.
Mm-hmm.
They're hands off. It's not like going up to Boulder and watching elk bugle with a glass of wine and a cheese board. This is really watching them enjoy that aspect. So I really appreciate it. I think you did an excellent job in identifying at least what I thought were the three parts. The repopulation, showing them in their natural beauty, and then giving us an education on what we need to do to ensure that they continue to thrive mm-hmm. in this community. So again, that's my long monologue. I apologize for that. But for our housekeeping stuff, where can our audience kind of not only potentially view the film, but also kind of get introduced into this moose environment, so to say?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously, like, a character that came in the film was North Park and Walden area. So Walden is a great place to go and recreate with a pretty good chance of seeing moose. I think it's like anything else when you're trying to find wildlife. It's enjoy the journey, and if you see some, enjoy that experience, but don't be disappointed.
What
if
was
you can't
that like? What am I thinking of? The building.
The Moose Visitor Center.
There it is.
Yeah,
the little white things where they're like, oh, you can see them here.
Yeah,
like,
it's really a great resource to go into over Cameron Pass or in the Gould area and go to that visitor center, and they'll tell you areas that you can see them, what you want to look out for. Like, you're going to want to be in like near river basins and willow basins because that's their
food
source.
Well, they embrace it, right? Like, I think
Absolutely.
That's what. Anybody coming out, you're already coming out to Colorado. We know you're coming. Go to Walden, go stop in the visitor center, have that conversation. They're going to tell you where to go. They've embraced that culture. Mm-hmm. They've embraced that as the economic boom that it is, but they want you to do it respectfully. And I thought that was really cool how people kind of put their little white pieces of paper of where they saw them,
where
right?
I've seen them. Yeah, and I think if you come out to Colorado, if you're here and want to go see moose, I think with anything with wildlife, I mean, you have to know your boundaries. You have to know, like, respect these animals. And moose are incredibly docile. They're calm because they're not scared of anything. Like, they're bigger than everything. But don't mistake that as, like, I can come approach
right.
this, because they're incredibly, like, they're massive, powerful animals.
Yeah, if you see a moose
and
think you can take them, like, it's not going to happen.
You can't outrun them. Like, they're wild animals, and let them kind of view them from a safe distance and respectful distance for both of you.
Absolutely.
As far as seeing the film, I'm kind of wrapping up some festival stuff.
Okay.
Like, I came out with it last spring, so spring 19, wrapping some festival stuff, and I'm working to try to get it up on Rocky Mountain PBS, as well as possibly the Outdoor Channel.
Is there like a website that the people can go to kind of see the progress?
Yeah, so my website, my company is Peach Creek Films. Okay. So if you go to Peach Creek Films, there's a tab for Colorado's Moose. You can follow Colorado's Moose on Facebook. Also follow Peach Creek Films on Facebook. You can kind of stay up to date. You can sign up for a newsletter on there. I don't really bombard you with newsletters, but every once in a while when something's important, I like to share it. And yeah. You know, if we get some movement rolling and kind of get it out on broadcast, certainly we'll let people know. And
perfect. Well, I mean, you did it all. I mean, you made a great documentary. You sold it to all of us out there. All of you are going to watch it, especially the people in Colorado. You know, or maybe you don't, we do have moose. And Sean does a great job of showing you where they're at and how you can go and view them in the correct way. And Sean, I really appreciate your time. Again, all of you guys, stay tuned to more content from the Front Range Film Festival. Outside of that, Sean Enders, Colorado's Moose, go to the site, do all the housekeeping here or underneath my name, whatever you want to do. And until next time, we'll see you soon.
Sean, thank you.
Excellent job.